someone's shoes and listen while they sing the blues. It could just as well be me, I know. So I've got no.
Welcome to The Growth Show, a place to challenge the convention and push ourselves to new levels in all things life, love, faith, and relationships. So let's leave your comfort zone behind. We are your hosts, Eddie.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're going to talk a little bit about finding the right mate.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, it's something people struggle with every day.
You're right. We probably should have talked about that a long time ago. I've been married almost 12 years now. Right. How long have you been married?
10.
10
now, yeah.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we can speak to some of you guys out there that are
still seeking.
In the process. Yeah. Maybe you're dating. Maybe you're engaged. And I think even some of you guys that are married, there are changes that you can make sometimes.
Right.
If some of the things that you hear today are like, well, yeah, I don't really like that. So we're speaking to all of you, and even if you've been divorced before, this would be a great place to maybe start to make some changes in thinking about maybe where. Not necessarily where you went wrong, because some divorces are very different, but, trying to insulate that, you do make a very good decision, because can you think of a decision, Ed, that's much more important than who you pick to marry?
Right. No kidding, right? I mean, most people don't walk down the aisle and say, man, I'm going to marry this person, and then, a couple weeks later, yeah, I'm just kind of done. And, maybe they're even thinking that during the altar. Yeah, I'm going to marry you for about a week and then we can just call it, right? That'd be good. Most people don't do that. They usually go to have and to hold till death do us part kind of thing, right? One of the things I like to think about, especially this idea of finding the right mate, especially if we haven't, but maybe we have found a mate, but maybe we don't feel like they're the right one. Maybe we can think of this as like a reset button to start over a new way, right? So why don't you start us off?
Sure. I think, the first thing you got to think of is the right fit, right? If you go, shopping for jeans, if you're anything like me, you got to try on about 15 pairs, I actually broke a pair of jeans one time when I was trying them on.
What?
I broke the pair of jeans.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. My legs are so big.
Oh,
but,
my gosh.
Anyway, you got to find the right fit. I couldn't fit into those jeans. And if you don't find the right, right fit for your spouse, you're not going to fit as a couple either.
Well, it brings up a great point that I think we often expect to find the right fit, but we forget too that we have to be the right fit, right?
I love the way you just put that, because that is so often the case when we have couples come in, or even our, a lot of our individual, clients will come in and they'll say, my wife is just, man, if you knew her, you'd have so much empathy and sympathy for me,
until you hear the other side.
Just, what he did this last week. Yeah. Right. You wouldn't believe it. And, some of that's true, of course, like nobody's perfect, but the only way you're ever going to really grow, and be happy in your relationship, and maybe I should save this, till the end, but I mean, it's, working on yourself and taking ownership over what your part is in that relationship. Now, that there's a caveat, because we probably have some listeners that might have some abuse going on in their relationship, and that does not include you, right? You have to know that nobody ever deserves that. And I want to make that very, very clear, that if you're being abused, you don't have to work harder not to be abused.
Right. Absolutely.
And that means, emotionally, physically, intellectually, anything.
Well, a big point there is, make sure you get help, get guidance, get support, get somebody to walk with you through that kind of stuff. But to get to maybe more of a pointed direction here with finding the right mate, I often tell, especially some of the single folks I work with, I often tell people this story, and it kind of goes like this. This woman goes and travels the world looking for Mr. Right. And she goes all over the world. She goes to Spain and finds this guy, and he is just amazing, just strong. He's a bullfighter. It's exciting. And then it doesn't work out. He's a little too narcissistic, or something happens. And then she goes, Germany and finds this guy, and he's just got everything's in order, just as you would expect. Everything's on time. Everything's clear. The guy's wealthy. He's got it all going on, but he's a little cold and unemotional, right? And then she goes to France, of course, the city of love, right? Paris, finds this guy. He is Mr. Right. He is perfect, just suave in every way, right? And then her friend that she's telling the story to often says, well, what happened? How come you didn't marry him? Well, he was looking for Mrs. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he really points to the idea that we have to come from a place of humility and just honor, hey, you know what? I got to be right too. I got to work this stuff out. And so what would be some great stuff for folks to think about, Matt, as they're thinking about finding that right mate, as they're evaluating themselves, just kind of get us rolling. What would be something good to start with?
Well, let's take it to the basics.
Good. Let's talk, do that.
Let's talk about somebody who's lonely and doesn't really know even where to meet somebody.
Right.
What do you do in that situation? And I think that the answers are, you know, not absolute, but I think there's definitely a road that you can walk down in terms of that.
Right.
You don't want to, you know, go find your car guy that's going to work on your car at the bank.
Right.
Right. You don't want to go find your gardener, you know, at the swimming pool.
Right.
Right. You want to find your spouse
at the right place.
Your future spouse, or, you know, even somebody that you can just date and have fun with.
Right.
You know, you're going to want to find them at somewhere that you have some type of connection with. I mean,
obviously
church is a great place.
Yep.
You know, the library, you know, bookstores, you know, that's for me maybe. But I mean,
you're looking for a reader, right?
I'm looking for a reader. What right. what would you be looking for?
I mean,
for?
You know, you got to find somebody that's got those common interests, right?
Yeah,
on some on the front end, you know, especially, you know, being a Christian, that church is going to be that number one place to find that person. You know, maybe finding those small groups, you know, finding somebody who's interested in God for themselves and not for you, right? And having a faith of their own, making it a little independent for them. The other piece of it too, right, is that common interest. Yeah, I mean, if you're a bookworm, man, go to a library, find somebody there too, maybe kind of just get to know people.
Right.
That's a big step. You know, for me, I found my wife on a blind date, so I don't know what that says, but the other methods weren't working, and so I tried that out, and it seemed to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it worked out well for you.
I know, right? Kind of an odd circumstance.
Right. I think the other piece, too, is I hate sometimes to give such specific things because,
right.
you know, when I've worked with people, whether it be friends or clients or, you know, family members or whoever,
right.
You know, it's always a struggle until they find the person.
Right.
Right. I can't find anybody. And then all of a sudden one day that situation is gone.
Right.
Right. So obviously there's a lot of people in this world that are getting it right and finding out how to do it.
Well, at least 50%.
So making it even more simple than maybe what we just did is getting your heart right, you know, praying about it, inviting God into the process. Hey, God, I want to meet somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not your timing, it's not your timing. I'll deal with it.
Right.
But I'd really like to. You know,
right.
Do you have massive issues as a person?
Yep.
Like, is there things from your past that are, you know, that are creating bitterness or anything like that that might hold
right.
you back from how people perceive you? Like, all those things should be in an ideal, you know, setting taken care of before you
right.
kind of engage in that stuff. Not that you have to be perfect, because
no.
you don't.
At least in process.
Marriage is not a perfect thing, and you know, you can be 99 years old and been married
right.
for 84 years or something, and you know, it's you're still not going to be perfect,
right?
You know,
right.
and so you don't have to come into marriage perfect, but you know what? If you know some things that are going on, go do yourself a favor, you know, start working on them,
right.
get yourself at least in process, like you said, and then I think one of the big things, Ed, is you have to approach the world in certain situations and think in different scenarios with an open mind.
Yeah.
Right? Whether it's, you know, going to a new group, you
yep.
know, or you know, getting set up on a blind date
mm-hmm.
or going to a mixer or going online or
yep.
whatever avenue you decide, you have to be open to the idea that something could work.
Right. Well, and the good thing too is online dating is becoming more acceptable in today's culture, whereas previously it was thought to be this kind of sort of insane proposition, but a lot of people are finding success that way. My sister-in-law found her husband on a dating website. My mom found her husband on a dating website, you know, and they're all successful at this point and seem to be caring about each other. There are pros and cons and different research articles out on that kind of stuff and maybe why that works. But nonetheless, I mean, to kind of bring it back to point, one thing I find often, whether married or even considering premarital kind of stuff, is people don't talk about difficult issues. They don't talk about, especially Christians, I find, don't talk about faith issues. They sort of debate about and decide who's right or who's wrong. And then similarly, finances come into play that same way, where they determine where we either won't talk about it, or if we do, then my way's probably right. Have you ever experienced that?
Issues with money, talking with my wife or my
clients?
Well,
just with the finances, with money, with faith, and these kind of things, and just not talking about them, really, and sort of just making assumptions and shooting off the cuff, that kind of thing.
Well, and I was even trying to make a joke out of that. I think it's probably, you know, when you talk about sex, in-laws, and finances, I mean, those are the three biggest kabooms in a relationship that you're going to find.
Absolutely.
And I think it's a good place to start, you know, for us in kind of the nitty gritty of our conversation today is finances. You know, it depends on where you are. There's people that out there, and you might be one of these, that you don't care if you have a dollar to your name. You just need a pillow to sleep and, you don't even need to know where your next meal is coming from.
Right.
Then there's people on the exact, you know, other spectrum that, you know, really are ambitious and they want to live in a, you know, this size house and drive this type of car. And we're not promoting materialism here, but, you know, when you're dating and when you're thinking about, you know, actually pulling the trigger on something, you got to think about those things. Am I a good fit? Are we able to talk about this? Do I get uncomfortable when we spend money when we're together? Is our lifestyles different? You know, is this person a spender or a saver? You know?
Well, it's adding to the vulnerability of discussing our values and what we really value. And it's challenging us to confront our own values, first off, if hopefully. And then second point is challenging the other person's values and really trying to learn to negotiate those things, because they come up constantly and then truly they don't go away. Mm-hmm. Those discussions are constant. They always come back.
Mm-hmm. And within finances, Ed, one of the things I really counsel clients on is one person really does need to take control and be the point person.
Absolutely.
For the finances. And so when you're making this decision, you know, before you're married, are you willing to either abdicate that to your spouse, or are you willing to take that on and be the person that's going to be initiating these conversations and keeping your family on track?
Well, it's a lot like trying to drive a car. You know, two people can't do it at the same time.
That's
right.
Isn't that true?
Right. And so somebody's got to do it. Whether right or wrong, somebody's got to figure this stuff out. And somebody has to be okay, you know, letting the other person doing it. Mm-hmm. So that brings up, you know, the idea of, can I let go of control? Mm-hmm. Do I need to control? Do I feel safe if I don't have control? Mm-hmm. And allowing oneself to really dive in a little bit deeper on what's going on for me. And where's my struggle with this issue versus the finances themselves? Because oftentimes, right, it's not usually the money.
Right? Yeah, no, it's not usually the money. It's usually the hurt feelings and the unmet needs and the inability to be vulnerable or hear criticism, you know, from somebody. And I think with finances, there can be some very strange dynamics that if they're not addressed at a very early stage in your relationship, they can become, you know, toxins, you know, and just fester forever. You know, and some of that is, you know, who's going to be the main income earner? So a lot of the times that main income earner, right, especially if it's just one, is going to feel resentful sometimes. Yep. And I've had this come up in so many of my sessions. They feel resentful and they feel used.
Right.
Well, you know what, if you'd have talked about that, and this isn't meant to be a shaming statement, but you got to be okay with that when you start your marriage and you start your family and all that kind of stuff, if that's the lifestyle that you want. Now, if you don't want that, then you got to walk down a different road and look for somebody else who doesn't want that as well.
Right. Absolutely. And it's difficult to bring up those conversations in the dating world, isn't it? I mean, it's already hard enough for married couples to start bringing it up because they end up coming into us usually and bring it up then because it's already sort of after the fact. But if we were to sort of talk about things in a strange way, you know, kind of go a little counterculture and bring up issues ahead of time, well, shoot, I bet we'd be a lot better off in terms of trying to figure out and deal with these things now.
Well, just the last thing on... Well, the last thing I want to kind of mention on the finances, maybe we can kind of move on to that next piece.
Yeah, let's do that.
Is, you know, listening to Dave Ramsey.
Sure.
He has that kind of monthly budget that he encourages, you know, a couple to have. you know, it wouldn't be out of this world for you and your potential spouse to just think and make up a pretend budget, or just kind of talk through who's going to do this. You know, what, you know, how much can we spend? What's, what do you think is reasonable for, you know, shoes in a month, or for clothes in a month, or groceries in a month, or how much are we going to save, and all that kind of stuff. And I would refer you to people that are much smarter than us on those finances. Right. But the biggest thing is that you have a plan.
Absolutely.
And that you feel comfortable with that person.
Definitely.
You know,
well, so, a budget is such a difficult thing to talk about and negotiate. It's so important. And it's a constant thing. It's not something we can say, oh, well, we did it once and it's not working, it's their fault. No, we have to do it and then do it again. It's kind of like taking a shower. We have to probably do it every day or every other day sometimes.
I think we'll go for the every day.
Every day shower.
Especially, you know, being in this in a studio so close to you.
Oh, thanks.
let's go to this next piece here. I'm going to skip down, and I wanted to bring up spirituality.
Yeah.
For the next one.
Yeah.
Especially for our talk.
Yeah.
How many couples have you done counseling with, Ed, that come in as a, you know, Christian, non-Christian couple?
I've had a couple of those. And, you know, it's kind of a complicated scenario, because if one's a believer and one's not, it brings up a lot of questions about how do we raise kids? It challenges our values on sex, on finances, on just about everything it can, anyways. And the other piece of it, too, is sometimes folks will want to sort of evangelize to their spouse or to their partner. And, you know, to be honest, what I find is they don't usually get into the relationship for that purpose. They usually get in the relationship because they care about the person, not necessarily the person's faith.
Right.
And so it is this kind of conflict that they're going to struggle with probably for a long time, unless one either denounces their faith or one converts. And it is a big struggle, especially when kids start coming into play.
Now, I know our conversation is about kind of finding your ideal mate, but what would you say to those people out there that are in that position, Ed?
Ooh, that is a tough spot, man. Most of the time, I try to focus the people on just focusing on vulnerability and being honest instead of defensiveness. Mm-hmm. Because we find ourselves in any discussion with any friend, with any spouse, any couple, whatever it is, if we get into a defensive cycle and we start shutting down and get into these negative positions, whether we're dating or married, we won't have any headway anywhere on figuring out whether we want to either stay with this boyfriend or girlfriend or potential mate, or, you know, how we want to handle this current spouse that we have. And so I think the first step a lot of times is managing first ourselves and our own vulnerability and making sense of what's going on in these defensive cycles.
Yeah, and I think, just to piggyback on you, I think if I was in that position or talking to somebody in that position, I would be like, you got to pray for your spouse.
Oh, absolutely.
And you have to expect God to show up in a big way.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think that would be, you know, I don't think divorce is necessary or even should be really thought about in that scenario if everything else is, you know, okay, and there's not abuse and that stuff.
Well, especially if they have kids.
Yeah, yeah. And if it's just a difference in faith, not that that's not big, but I don't think that's a divorce area. But I think, you know, praying and being really open to some big movement from God is...
Well, and this is a common issue we're seeing more and more. I mean, people, I don't think, heed the warning of being equally yoked, as Scripture talks about, in choosing our spouses and choosing our partners. And when I think of the idea of equally yoked, I think of two oxen, right, being yoked together and pulling a load behind them. How are we going to effectively do that if we're not equally yoked? You know, we might as well be paddling with a single oar and, you know, going in circles in some level, because the burden's always going to be further on one side than another.
Yeah, it's really hard. And, you know, I'm going to kind of shift one more time here. Let's say you take the plunge, you've decided, and all of a sudden, you know, it's your weekend with the in-laws for the first time. what do you know, Ed, about working with couples? And
well, you know, let me start from this point. Is my personal experience for my in-laws is a little jaded, because they're actually really great. I have really good in-laws.
Jaded because they're great, huh?
Right, jaded because they're great, you know? And so because, you know, most experiences I have from clients that I see is usually it's not great. And most of the time I hear from most folks is that it's usually not great. And so that's why I say jaded. But, you know, I was kind of pleasantly surprised. I didn't expect it. I felt it like I was kind of warmly welcome. So for me, it was kind of a unique experience as compared to what most people, I think, experience and most of the folks that I work with have experienced is not quite that.
Right. Well, in my situation, we don't exactly have the Everybody Loves Raymond episode where the, you know, the in-laws are living down the street, but
right.
We're 5 minutes away from both grandma and grandpa's.
Sure.
And aunts and uncles are all in that same vicinity. So it's the in-laws are a big part of our life. And I know that when things are going really well, which they are most of the time,
sure.
That's such an added benefit and brings such growth and warmth and you know, kind of just a sense of family to our
Absolutely.
Lives. But, you know,
it's not always the case.
Oh, it's, you know, and maybe we have a little bit different perspective from the line of work that we do. But I know that a lot of the times our couples come in and they just don't know how to deal
right.
with that other, you know, mother-in-law or father-in-law or brother-in-law or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it may be that continues to be that bad, you know, voice in one of the spouse's ears.
Right.
And you know that spouse, that particular influenced spouse is always right. feeling like they're just being ripped apart. Like they have to be good for their family of yep. origin and they have to be good for their new husband or wife. And they have to be all these things. And what would you suggest to address that?
Yeah. You know, my first thought on that is every couple must decide that they are the most important piece of the family unit for them. So in other words, the husband and wife, they are the safe haven. They are the safe place to vent, to discuss issues, so that if anything happens outside of that sort of bubble, they have some place to go. So if there is an issue with an in-law, they have a place to go that's safe to talk about. But it takes a little bit of time to foster that safety and foster that trust. But gosh, it's vital to have that with our spouse, because who else do we have? And if we don't have that, then what do we end up in? Battle, complaint, negative cycles, continuing to kind of put up the walls, getting defensive, trying to protect our other family members, and forgetting that we married this person, hopefully for the rest of our life, and even considering maybe backtracking a little bit in the idea of getting to know and dating, maybe meeting the parents first, too, to decide if that's a family you want to marry into.
So right? let me give you, for instance, and
yeah.
you tell me.
Yeah.
You just fall head over heels over this this girl. We're assuming you're not married, or this is, you know, pre you and your wife, and you meet her father-in-law, and he's a monster. What do you do? How do you handle something like that?
Well, I can tell you how I did handle something not quite like a monster, but something similar.
Okay.
Is I eventually just ended the relationship,
right?
Because I didn't want to marry into the family.
Sure.
You know, and for me it was a pretty clear decision. I didn't know that I could tolerate that, and so for me that was an okay decision. Maybe for others, they're still head over heels for that person. And I guess what ultimately is going to have to happen is that, again, creating that safe bond with that potential spouse and trust with them and deciding together how to handle it, deciding together how to confront these issues and if it's worth it.
Yeah. And I think you're going to always have to be aware of what you're willing to deal with.
That's
and
right.
if you're willing to deal with it, you got to make that decision, then you got to not look back.
Absolutely.
Right? I wanted to bring up another point with the in-laws.
Yeah.
Sometimes we come from not just different religious backgrounds, but we come from different cultural backgrounds.
Right.
And, you know, different ethnicities
right.
or different cultural groups sometimes have a different way of doing family.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And
can you imagine like a big Latin family, do big events, a lot of family members, everybody's hanging out, you know, and then you have like typical kind of white America who's sort of independent, small family, and they're somehow going to their other family. They're going to be overwhelmed.
Right.
Can you imagine?
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. No, I know I was living out in California when we were both going to graduate school at
yeah.
Vanguard.
Yeah.
And we went up to Compton.
Oh, yeah.
To join, you know, a distant kind of family member.
Yeah.
He was the pastor of one of the churches up mm-hmm. there. And I remember going into this church, and I had came from, you know, Williston, North Dakota, that
right.
everybody comes in and sits down and, you know, is
quiet.
Very, very proper. And, you know, and so I'm sitting in this church, and all of a sudden the flags start to run around the, you know, the building, and we have homeless people coming in and eating the crackers and drinking the wine from communion.
Yeah.
And it was culture shock.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I bring that up kind of to bring some levity to the conversation, but I think you have to be aware of that when you're thinking about, is this the right spouse for me? Is this the right family for me? You gotta be aware of that.
Right.
Am I okay with that? Do I want to have a big, huge, large family that we share things with, or am I a little bit more reserved? And you know, not that that's a do or die or make it or break it, but what are you willing to do?
Requires flexibility.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the cool thing about having such difference is it's going to always push us to stretch ourselves, to grow, to force us to really see who we are and see what those differences really look like. And I guess really push us to, as this show talks about, grow, right? Challenge the conventions.
Did you
talk something different?
Did you talk to your wife about how many kids you wanted to have before you got married?
We did. Yeah. Yeah. And we had a range of 2 to 4.
Okay.
We're at 2. My wife really wants 3. There's no chance of 4.
Well, and that was kind of my next topic, is that we do need to talk about those difficult issues of what we expect.
Absolutely.
Right?
We have to put it on the table.
Yep. Yeah. Children, hey, what about where you want to live?
Right.
Yeah. Do you want to live in Kentucky, you know, Colorado, you know, Mexico?
And does it matter? Could you live in a tent and be okay?
Yeah. Some people could.
Yeah.
Some people absolutely could not.
Yeah. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
I'm not living in a tent.
Well, yeah,
that was a make or break for me. No tents.
Well, and then the whole idea, Ed, of are we going to take care of, you know, your parents when they get sick? Are they going to come live with us, or are we going to pay some money or help or be distant when they go into a nursing home or an assisted living? Like, you should have those conversations and at least be comfortable, you know, with what you're going to do well before that those situations happen.
Absolutely. You know, another big issue that I suppose gets glazed over, or maybe we forget about, is creating goals or vision for what we want things to look like. Not just challenging what things are and getting to know those things, but where do we want it to go? What do we want the relationship to look like? And I find that many couples, and myself included, until I kind of stumbled upon this idea, is that never considered this stuff, right? I mean, my goal is not to go live in a tent in the middle of the wilderness, but I certainly have goals for my family, where I'd like to see everybody go. And I think it is fair to have those goals, and I think we need to express those goals and talk about those types of things.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, we already talked about a few of those goals being children and, you know, where you're going to live.
Right.
I think, you know, I know that you have a situation worked out with your wife where, you know, you guys kind of share in the parenting duties.
Yeah, we do.
But that's a decision that you guys made.
Yeah.
Now, what if you have, you know, both parents that want to work and they don't want to share?
Right.
Well, and that can be fine.
And they have a nanny.
But you have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
And those are those goals that you have to talk about. And you just really have to be okay with. And you have to do your homework on and make sure it's the right thing for you.
Absolutely.
You know, another thing is, you know, who's going to work? Who's not going to work?
Definitely.
You know, are you comfortable with somebody working, you know, 60 hours a week?
Totally.
You know, and you have, not that you're always going to know who you're going to be 10 years down the road.
Right.
But you at least have to know who you are at that point, what your goals are at that point.
Absolutely. You know, and you can bring up a good point. When we talk about who we are 10 years down the road, I mean, the truth is we got to have goals right now to at least give us some vision and direction. But the reality is that in 5 years, you might have different goals and different vision, and that's really okay. And I think the constant conversation of talking about those things is vital to the health and well-being of a marriage. And it really points to the idea that we're always on this voyage. We're never stopping. We're always in this process of growth, and we're never stopping. And really, a lot of times, that's the tool, is accepting that we're in this process.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. Can we talk about sex?
Maybe. I mean, it depends on how far we go.
Okay. What do you think? What do you think couples should know about sex before they pull the trigger? What kind of conversation should they have?
I think the first step for a lot of folks that maybe is missed, because I think a lot of let me back up. The focus, I think, a lot of times is primarily on frequency and styles and all these types of things, and whether they want to have it before or after marriage. And I think those are good points to talk about. But one point that I think gets missed is sort of a sense of self-esteem with one's own body and being comfortable with themselves, because it's a really vulnerable place, and feeling safe within themselves is really going to make any kind of intimate experience, taking it from an emotional to a sexual expression, that much greater in terms of an expression of what God originally designed for us. It's allowing us to come back into a sense of comfortability.
Well, and I think, just to be completely brutally honest, Ed, I think some of this stuff is a little bit overdone when we talk about sex.
Sure.
You know, because, you know,
like this big thing.
Yeah. The reality is what, and you know this more than anybody.
Yeah.
What makes people compatible sexually is what makes them compatible, you know, emotionally.
Absolutely.
Which is what makes them compatible spiritually, which is what makes them compatible intellectually. And you got all these
financially
different things.
And his parents and so forth.
And if you're connecting, and by far the most in all of those is emotionally.
Yep.
And if you're connected emotionally with your spouse, then what happens in the, you know, the old saying from David Snarch,
right,
is what happens in the living room happens in the
bedroom,
and vice versa.
Absolutely.
And so I think, you know, I hear it from, you know, secular, you know, people a lot that, hey, you need to try it out, right? You need to make sure you're compatible.
And test drive the car.
Test drive the car.
But don't worry, you can always return it.
Right. I mean, and I think that that's just not the case.
Well, there's some interesting research. I have an article on, I can't remember the title of it specifically, but it's fascinating. It's some sociologists did some research on living together before they're married. And this is fascinating. It's a non-religious article. And it really points to the idea that, or what they found, is that those that live together first actually have a higher likelihood of divorce upon marriage. The article didn't point to why that was, but maybe the assumption is, and some of what they kind of pointed to is kind of like this idea of test driving a car. It's there's no full commitment. You didn't really buy the car and you're not choosing to keep it.
Oh, I that makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. I wanted to, just for the sake of time, kind of jump to our next you know, segment with this and bring up a little research that John Gottman did out in Seattle.
That's good stuff.
He created the, you know, for those of you that don't know, he created the Love Labs, where he actually
Gottman
had
Institute.
People, you know, who came into these Love Labs and were hooked up to all these machines that measured their physiological responses and and all that. And then he would have these people fight.
Yeah.
You know, and then he would measure everything and
hooked up with a bunch of wires fighting each other.
Can you imagine being a fly on the wall? You know, just being so dang confused. Like, what is going on here?
okay, guys, go ahead and fight,
Fight now.
All the machines are on.
Yeah. Bring up your trigger items. But what they found in these, and it's just genius what he did, but what they found is there's four things, and they call them the four horsemen of the apocalypse, you know, for relationships. And it's criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling.
Yeah.
And these are four things that he could, I can't remember exactly if it was within a minute or 2 minutes or something of watching a tape.
He had a 90-something percentile prediction rate of divorce.
Yeah, a predicting divorce based on how they did these things.
Right, it's kind of unbelievable.
So, you know, if you start, you know, speaking to you listeners, if you're in a relationship or you maybe you're already married and you have some of these things going on, criticism, are you constantly thinking about what's wrong and picking on your spouse? Do you have contempt? Are you just angry at them all the time and just blaming them? Are you defensive when they try to bring things up? You know, and stonewalling for, you know, our listeners is an act where you pretend like you're not listening, and you just almost like a stone wall. You walk around with, you know, almost pretending
kind
like you're not
off.
Hearing.
Yeah, cutting off, shutting down, that kind of thing.
It can be gamey.
Yeah.
It can look really icky. But those are the four things that, you know, tend to derail a relationship of any
absolutely.
Length.
And it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't determine it. You know, the likelihood, I mean, if there's some hope out there, if you do experience those things, I mean, most of the couples that we work with experience any or all of these types of things. Does it mean it's the end? No, it just means that, you know, you probably need some help or to work and focus on some of these things and not in a critical way and saying, well, they have all the problems, they have the issues. It's sort of taking a look at the mirror and saying, man, that's me. I got this.
Well, I think the easy answer to make that simple for everybody out there is if you see these things, you know, especially if you're not married and you're thinking about it, go get some help. You know, go get some premarital therapy. You know, bring it up with your fiance or boyfriend or girlfriend. And if you can't figure it out and you can't fix it, then I would be very, very hesitant.
You know, this brings up a really good kind of side point is, what's the difference and what's the benefit of premarital counseling with a therapist or a pastor or both? What do you think?
Well, I think that they're both amazing. And I would encourage couples to do often, and I have actually experienced this. I've had couples kind of go through both. Yeah. I think with the spiritual piece and meeting with your pastor, it's going to be focused a lot more on, you know, some of the biblical teachings of what makes marriage good, and you know, and
sort
that's
aligning your faith.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then, I mean, my thought on the therapist piece, the benefit that way is they're gonna be pulling from sort of the science, I guess, of relationships, right? And what happens and all these things. We pointed to the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, Gottman's research. I mean, this is really helpful stuff when we're working with people through them. And if we can get a hook into that stuff ahead of time, man, we can sure make some progress. But then again, if we meet with a pastor who can really clarify some issues of faith, I mean, shoot, we can make some real good progress that way too.
Yeah, I wish we could combine them.
Yeah, right?
Oh yeah, I forgot we have.
Kinda. Oh yeah, right. I know. I mean, we are Christian therapists.
Yeah,
And we do have some biblical training and that kind of thing. Yeah. And we have a lot of experience working with the Christian population as well as the non-Christian population.
Yeah, I think that the one big advantage of seeing, you know, a more traditional therapist over a pastor would be that, you know, that therapist is trained to see dynamics.
Right.
And they're trained to pick certain things out.
Sure.
And they've, you know, watched countless videos and read so many books and are trained in that way.
Yeah.
And so you're probably going to learn a little bit on a different level,
right?
You know, from that.
Well, there's benefits from either side.
I mean,
you can learn something from either side. I think really the big point, just like anything else, like a self-help book or anything, it's going to be useless to us unless we do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can go to the best therapist in the world or the best pastor, counseling pastor in the world, and get nothing from it if you're not wanting to grow.
Mm-hmm. And finding the right fit, Ed.
Absolutely. That's key.
Yeah. I know in one of our later shows, we're going to be talking about, you know, what therapy looks like and what to expect, and we'll kind of save some of that for then. But one of the biggest things is that if you go to a premarital therapist and you don't feel good about it right away and you know, you talk to some people and you pray about it and you feel like it's confirmed,
right?
Go find a different one.
Yeah. I mean, think about it this way. I mean, I'm not trying to throw the therapy profession under the bus here, but we're contractors, like coming into your house, working on your house. If you don't like the work, go find something else. Go find somebody else. Take care of yourself. It's more important for you to get help than it is to sit with somebody.
Now, I will say, if you've went through like 10, you know,
therapists,
you know, you might want to point the finger around a little bit.
I know, right? Well, just like anything else, I mean, this is the funny thing is that the dynamic is so similar between usually the couple and then sometimes with the therapist too. But let's move on here, I think.
Yeah, rules and roles. That's kind of a fun one.
Killer point to talk about. Roles in a marriage. I mean, we talked earlier about finances, who runs finances. We talked earlier about who's going to work and who's going to be a stay-at-home mom. But there's such, on a deeper level, there's all kinds of roles that we play and we don't even realize.
No, absolutely. Like who's going to, you know, pick up the dog poo and, right. you know, who's going to be the consoler to make it a little bit more serious. Who's going to be the one that breaks the silence first if there's an argument.
Totally.
Who's going to... you know, send that nice card and
try to reconcile things.
And who's going to, like, if we have an extrovert and an introvert and they marry, like, who's going to be the one that, you know, it's okay to allow the extrovert to go mingle a little bit more and bring more life back in. And it's okay for the extrovert to sit in a few nights, you know,
totally.
Or a few weekends or something.
Right.
And those are the roles. And you gotta think about those.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we learn all of these roles from our family. From where we came from, right? I mean, we develop certain understandings of what our role could be. And, you know, sometimes the roles are not fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes the roles are things like, you know, you're the bad one in the family or you're the good one. And that's always going to be your role. And it's a lot of pressure and it's not fair to the individual, right?
Yeah. No, we do. Like whether it's the, you're the comedian.
Right.
Right. Or you're the intellectual or you're the fixer.
Right.
And we do, we carry some of those labels
yeah.
around, but you know, all of a sudden we meet somebody and that maybe they have the same role.
Right. Right. So they challenge who we are.
Right. And maybe some of those roles aren't very healthy.
Right.
And maybe they got put on us, you know, unfortunately and inadvertently
sure.
and they shouldn't have.
Absolutely.
And are we willing and do we have a spouse or a potential spouse that's willing to kind of stand with us to make change there.
Right.
I mean, or are they going to put us into that totally. And keep us into that role that we don't want to be in?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the second part too is sort of the unspoken rules of a household. I mean, these are, you know, they're definitely in tandem with the roles, but on a more specific level, it's important to think about how we fit together and to do that, learning about the rules, the unspoken rules in a household. I mean, I've dealt with a lot of couples who have this role or rule rather that we are to read minds and people should know and ought to know.
What did I just say?
Right. Exactly. Well,
what did I just think?
And we make up assumptions and we get ourselves in a tizzy because we don't fully understand what's happening because they have this strange rule that we need to just assume.
Yeah.
Inappropriately in a lot of ways, what's happening and then predict the future. So then we know how to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, it puts us in such a tough spot.
Or some of those old rules, too, like if mommy ain't happy, nobody happy.
Right.
Right. And you take that on. I've seen women take that on.
Right.
You know, in our sessions.
And, so and almost entitled.
Yeah. Like you need to make me happy. That's why you're not happy.
Right.
Right? That's not why you're not getting what you want in this relationship right. because you haven't focused on me.
Right.
Right.
That's not a relationship. It's
no.
like a dictatorship.
Yeah. And it's a rule that you know. Particular
right.
person
grew
learned
up
from
with,
her
yeah.
childhood or from
absolutely.
You know her friends or whatever, but she's carrying it on and it has to be challenged.
Well, and it's important as we grow, just like the show talks about, we got to challenge the conventions. We got to challenge the things in life and relationships that we thought we knew because we will be challenged. It's inevitable. We're always going to be challenged. And the cool thing is we have to welcome that challenge with open arms. Otherwise, we're not going to grow and we will be stuck in these cycles and these old rules, these old roles that we have found ourselves in. We're going to find ourselves in this cycle simply doing this four horsemen of apocalypse and really hurting ourselves and isolating ourselves from developing healthy and intimate relationships, the ones that we are looking for.
Oh, absolutely. What do you think, Eddie? You know, now we've kind of talked through a lot of these things that we look for. What do you think, if you could kind of describe a scenario or a mm-hmm. situation like this would be a good set of, you know, values and set of, you know, personality traits and whatnot that you could say, yeah, you guys should get married. Is there a length of time that they should date? You know, is there... You know, anything in particular that you would give feedback to some of our listeners that are maybe going through that?
You know, that's a tough question, Matt. And part of the reason why I say that is because our divorce rate in society is around 50%. And divorce doesn't discriminate between race, religion, or politics. It seems to be pretty consistent. With that said, as the title of the show goes, growth, right? If somebody is willing to grow with you, they're willing to have the hard conversations, man, that's somebody to hang on to. Wouldn't you say?
I would say that the one thing that if I was looking for a spouse, and I'm happily married, so I'm not, but if I was looking for a spouse, they would have to be kind
yeah.
and they would have to be vulnerable.
Absolutely. And that is indicative of growth. I mean, if we're not kind, if we're not vulnerable, then we will not grow.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If we're not open to the, I guess, the storms that may come upon us in a voyage across the sea, then we're not going to know how to navigate that properly, and we're going to lose our way.
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to get to our destination.
I do want to kind of point out that a lot of people, when they're dating, they get infatuated.
Oh, sure.
And we probably should have brought this up way
right.
before at the beginning
right.
of the show, but you get infatuated and you know, no matter what the person that you're dating does, they just are so cute. Oh, he didn't pay his mortgage this month.
And they look past
such
it.
Such a silly guy, you know, or whatever, you know. And you don't have a sense
yeah,
of reality when
right.
you're going through that infatuation. And your brain chemistry is, you know, whacked and your
right.
endorphins are going crazy. And I think we need to be very, very careful sometimes And that would be my, you know, recommendation for you guys out there. If you're looking, is don't let, you know, what you see through the goggles,
right,
you know, be what you think is you're going to see over time. Because we a lot of the times will say like, oh, this person can change that. And this person can change that. And this person can change that. Right. And we kind of hope and hope and hope that these things will change.
Absolutely. And it's such a struggle to figure this stuff out. And you know what, for the sake of, you know, our listeners or anybody who's interested, you know, I encourage you guys to seek help. Contact us if you want to. Ask us more questions.
How can they find us at?
ncsradioministries.net/NCSM, or rather NCSRM blog, B-L-O-G.
Okay, and you can also find us, if you're in the Colorado area, we do have a business where we're seeing clients, marriages, premarital, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's called Voyages Counseling Ministry, and you can find us at voyagescounseling.com. Any closing thoughts, Ed?
You know, again, keep up the good fight. I mean, this is all about growth. It's not about arriving. We need to enjoy the ride.
Yeah, we need to enjoy the ride, and don't be so hard on yourself. Yeah. You know, as you're going through this, have some fun. If you feel overwhelmed, read some books, get some help. You know, talk to some people that have been married for, you know, 15, 20 years that you actually look up to. Right. There's a lot of resources out there. You can read, you know, a book like Hold Me Tight by Susan Johnson. John Gottman has some good material
lots of
that
books
you can
out there.
Read. But do your due diligence. At a bare minimum, you got to go to some premarital therapy if you're going to get married. I think
Absolutely.
It should be legally
required,
like, required to marry, is that you go and you get yourself some premarital.
Probably save a lot of money in divorce fees.
Absolutely. So, well, it was fun hanging out with you guys today.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to talk about some stuff that hopefully you guys will take home, and hopefully you guys will implement, and hopefully you guys will join us again for more of The Growth Show.
We'll see you next time. You know, my friend, I'm just like you. Sometimes it's hard to find the truth.